It's National Teachers Appreciation Day, and we are shouting out some of the teachers that made an impact on you. Danny is in my inbox and says, shout out to Mr. Ralph Scalise. Scalise. He says, I wasn't the biggest fan of history or school for that matter, but showing up to world history class my sophomore year in high school was always the highlight of my day. He was one teacher who always went against the grain. He didn't teach the standard way with textbooks and quizzes, but rather taught with personal experiences and stories. Because of that, it changed my whole outlook on education and my thought process. There's not just one way to do anything in the world, and just because someone says do it this way doesn't mean that's the only way. Thank you, Ralph Scalise. That's awesome.
John says, I was talking about Catholic school where you got the paddle from Sister John Agnes.
Oh, gosh.
He's a parochial school Lutheran. He said, how about the rubber hose? Oh. Principal Fisher and Jerry Mettinger.
Oh, wow.
Again, this is Teacher Appreciation Day. Not the bad teachers.
Yes, please.
Let's highlight the good teachers. I'm sure that Matt, with his kids and himself, he's had good teachers in his life. He joins us now, Matt Lothar from KATV. You got a favorite teacher that made a difference to mold you to the person that you are now, appearing on our television screens?
Well, I would probably have to go with my mom. She was a kindergarten teacher for, I believe it was 37 or 38 years, and just recently retired. I guess she's been retired for 2 years, but she couldn't give it up. She's back substitute teaching, and I feel like she's doing that just as much as she has. You know, it's not 5 days a week, but it's usually 3 or sometimes 4 days a week. But yeah, I couldn't really go with anybody but her. She, I never had her like in class, but you know, she's still a teacher and probably shaped me the most of any teacher.
Okay, so you probably had two kindergarten classes. And you were in the other class?
In Glenwood, there was 6 kindergarten classes.
Jeez, good recruiting down there.
Well, I don't know if you can go that far.
6 kindergarten classes.
It wasn't athletic recruiting because I think when I was a sophomore in high school, that was the first time Glenwood had a winning basketball record in like 35 years. Winning record, not make the playoffs, a winning record. So they were recruiting just maybe in terms of numbers, not necessarily in terms of athletic prep.
Now, would you have wanted your mom as a teacher back then?
No, I don't think so. You know, what was really cool about her being a kindergarten teacher is, so when I was in kindergarten, even when I was like in first and second grade, it was all in the same building. So like after school, instead of taking the bus home, my brother and I, we would just go hang out in her room until she was ready to leave. Mm. You know, she had different meetings and whatnot, but she had all the toys that, you know, she probably wasn't going to buy us at home, but she had all the good stuff, you know, to build forts and different things in her classroom. So, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily, that's kind of a blurry line, but it was nice to kind of reap the benefits of her being a teacher when I was younger.
Give me a player on the offense and defense that after the spring, all the interviews, twice being able to see players up close, give me an offensive and defensive player that you're buying stock in, that you know that you'll buy stock in today, that on May 4th, they'll be around and be a contributor on September 4th when Nebraska plays their second game of the season.
Just like... anybody on offense, anybody on defense?
Maybe not the obvious.
Okay. I think offensively I'm buying stock in Oliver Martin.
Good call.
I think it was kind of a weird year last year for him just because he became eligible halfway through the season, and so he wasn't really running with the ones or the twos in practice, and then he was kind of thrown out there. But I think that for him, it's a deal of if once he got comfortable really at any location, you know, whether it was Michigan, Iowa, or Nebraska, once he got comfortable, you're really going to see who he is as an athlete. So I feel like his stock is, I'm not going to say it's like super low, but I think that it's very affordable, and I think that it's trending in the right direction. Defense?
Let me add one thing about Oliver Martin, because I talked to somebody that covered him in high school in Iowa. And they got a chance to interview him this spring. They told me that he is completely different from the Oliver Martin that was at Michigan and at Iowa. They feel from their conversation that he has found a home here, that he finally feels like this is the place for him. And maybe that also adds to, he had a really good spring. I think he's the number one wide receiver on this roster. I'm with you on buying stock on him. I actually had him on the list. But he may have finally, and you know, I mean, you're on your third Big Ten school. He may have finally found a place that what he wants, he's getting, and it meets what that school needs as well.
On the and then I guess in terms of defense, it's tough for defense because like they return all the pretty much the whole team. One guy that I just kind of always felt like stood out to me a little bit, and we didn't see him a bunch, but I would be buying stock, and that's Jordan Riley.
Yes.
I just feel like he is so massive, and he just feels like he would be and again, he's not at a position where he's going to have double-digit tackles or anything like that. I just think that I feel like in some extent, in some of the same way with Oliver Martin, didn't see the field as a lot last year, but still stuck with it, you know, is on the team this spring. I feel like he could be a guy that maybe next year at this time we're looking at like, hey, this is one of the guys on this defensive line.
You know what? He is somebody, and there's a couple of other guys that are young that are, you know, on the uptick. I think Blaze Gunnarsson showed this spring he's going to have a future playing football at Nebraska. And then I'm going to throw in the fact of who his position coach is, who Mike Dawson, and hey, the outside linebackers have to be better. Nebraska has to be able to hit the quarterback, pressure the quarterback, tackle the quarterback. They haven't done that well enough. Randy Gregory is long gone. But I think Mike Dawson, with a guy like Blaze Gunnarsson, who I saw a lot of improvement this spring, he falls into that category. They have some young players that have maybe been here for a year, year and a half. They just need to play some football. They need to play some football that matters. Reps in practice are great, but they now need game reps. I think Jordan Riley is the same. I like your pick of Jordan Riley. I think he had points that I saw him in those two open periods. He was unblockable for offensive linemen, and he was going against the number one offensive line. I think he has good technique. I like his hands. I think his footwork has gotten better. But he just needs to play football when it matters against other competition. But I think those are two guys that I like on the defense. I Jordan Riley's going to have an opportunity. But then there's the, you know, the nice thing, the luxury for Nebraska on that side of the ball, Matt, is we just mentioned two guys who had pretty good springs but may not play a lot because Nebraska's developed some depth along their position group.
I think that's part of it. But I still want to kind of the – with the same with Gunnarsson and Jordan Riley, I know is a little bit banged up, but it's nice to see guys that sometimes when a newcomer comes in and they get hurt, they just get totally lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. And they, like, you never hear from them again. And then, you know, 18 months later, they transfer out because they just got buried. So you got to give those two guys like a ton of credit for rehabbing back and kind of coming back to the guys everyone thought that they could be. Somebody asked me actually about Gunnarsson, and I said, he kind of just seems like a longer, leaner version of like a Garrett Nelson. I mean, he's got that same kind of motor, but got a little bit more length to him and not, you know, might have the same poundage in terms of weight, but it just distributed a little bit different.
Well, and I think he's got down the defense where he's not hesitating. When the ball is snapped, he doesn't hesitate. He goes and he knows where he's going, and that can bode well. But again, at the outside linebacker spot, now there are opportunities to move up and play because they have some great unknowns, and you know we're waiting on Caleb Tanner to, I don't know, have a big year. I mean, he's somebody at that position that I think's got to sack the quarterback and get to the quarterback. It can't be all on the other side with JoJo Doman. I think another, you know, unfortunate when it was confirmed by Scott the other day about Will Honus. You know, you acquire as much talent as possible. Chris Kolarvik, who starts at the middle of the semester from Northern Iowa, he starts when Will Honus is here. Honus goes down. Kolarvik gets to play a lot more on Saturday. I think Nebraska's going to be fine. You know, Will Honus has played a lot of football. I think Chris Kolarvik will be okay, that you don't have to worry about those two inside linebacker guys. And I tell you, I would roll with the top three and feel real comfortable. Nick Henrich had a fantastic spring. Did not play on Saturday, maybe a little load management. Luke Reimer is Luke Reimer. He's a Saturday guy, or he's a Sunday guy eventually. And then Kolarvik has proven that. I think he's big enough physically that he can hold his own in the Big Ten.
The drop off there, I think we were talking about in the newsroom last week when we had kind of heard whispers of Honus. We said, which is a bigger kind of blow to the, in terms of big time injury? Is it Fedoni or is it Honus? Almost tough because both of those position groups, there isn't that massive drop off with either of those guys. And I get it. Fedoni would have been, he was running with the third teams, but he was going to see the field this fall. But you do, I mean, obviously you never wish for an injury and you feel bad for a guy like Will Honus who just continues to, have issues with his knees. And you just kind of think, oh man, I'm not sure that they'll drop off as much as they would have a year ago at this time.
See, I think also the final thought on the outside linebacker room, because we haven't mentioned Payne. We haven't mentioned Garrett Nelson. Javon Wright did not play on Saturday, but he's going to play. Kapai just needs to get physically bigger. He's going to be an inside guy. I think the fact that Mike Dawson is coaching that position, he will make some of those younger guys better. I don't know that he can take Caleb Tanner to the next step, but I think some guys that are a little bit newer in the program, Mike Dawson will have a major impact on. That outside linebacker will get closer to what it needs to be at Nebraska. And it needs to be for this defense in 21 to be able to help out all the levels from the front seven all the way to the back four or five.
I mean, he's kind of done it before, and you see the kind of progression of the guys that are the ones and twos now, and you think, boy, if he's done that, kind of a start and stop in terms of coaching here and then stopping and then coaching here. And so, yeah, you think if there's the continuity there, I think you're right. I think he's going to turn that position group will be relatively deep, heading into the fall.
Yeah, I know I ask you this. It seems like it's now every other week. Drew Christo threw a no-hitter this past weekend against Omaha Bryant. They're getting closer to the postseason for baseball around here. We're also getting closer to the draft. You've covered Elkhorn enough, and it's not just Drew. They've got other talented players on that roster that are headed to play Division I baseball. When something like that happens and he's lighting up radar guns, is there any part of you that says, uh-oh, his stock is starting to rise with Major League Baseball scouts? I think he's going to be a tough sign because I think he really wants to go to Nebraska. But is there any point or is there any part of you that says, yeah, he might be getting into that range where the discussion becomes a little bit more serious about how high he's drafted?
I'm not sure a no-hitter is necessarily like the selling point for a lot of
No, but it's just part of his resume this year.
Correct, yeah. Correct. The different people I've talked to, I talked to somebody who said that in conversations that they had with a scout had said, hey, look, every Major League Baseball team would take Drew Christo. Like, they would. They look at that guy and they're like, yeah, this guy he's a pro. He is a pro. But they want him at the price that they want to sign him at. Uh-huh. Which makes me believe that Christo's asking price. And look, if I had a son or if my son was in his position, I'd be asking for a high high signing bonus. My price tag would be relatively high as well. I mean, he's got all the leverage. He can go to college. He could go pro. And so I from what I understand, it's trending more and more that he is likely going to go the college route because of the signability. And I think what it would take, not necessarily a no-hitter, it's definitely a feather in the cap in terms of your resume, but I think that it would take I don't want to say a big time bump. It's not like he's got to go out and throw 99 miles an hour, but I think that he would have to sustain, 96 for an inning and a half or so. That would be a little bit more of a, oh my gosh, now it looks like, he could be one of these guys that shoots up draft boards, with 6 weeks to go or whatever.
Hey, we'll get you on this. Let's talk Creighton and Nebraska baseball. I don't want to ignore Omaha because they're playing well, but they're in a one-bid league in the Summit. Let's first talk about the Big East. Creighton's in first place. They're not getting help from the rest of the conference. They weren't able to play UConn, which UConn put together a pretty aggressive non-con schedule. They played Texas Tech. They played Southern Miss. They played Virginia. As a result, they've got the top RPI in the Big East. It may just be a one-bid league with whoever wins the conference tournament. What do you think the roadmap looks like if Creighton is trying to get an at-large bid? Is it possible?
I'm not sure it's possible. It's going to be weird because I'm not sure that RPI is going to play as big of a factor this year as it has in previous years, just because, you know, some schools have been limited on who they can play and where they can play. And, you know, for example, and I'm not saying Georgetown's getting in, but, you know, like Georgetown, they, you know, like the county ordinance says that they can't host any game unless the team is from the state of Virginia, the state of Maryland, or and it might be just those two areas, you know. And so, like, when Creighton goes out to play Georgetown, they have to go play at University of Maryland's baseball field because they can't. So, like, there's all – and no places – there's nothing uniform, you know. It may be uniform in a conference, but, you know, then you have the Big 12 and the Big 10, and they are completely different. So I'm not sure RPI is the biggest I'm not sure that is as big of a factor this year as it maybe usually is. I think Creighton's at-large bid would be a very tough sell for me just because their non-conference slate isn't what it traditionally is when they get to play Kansas State, Wichita State, Nebraska, and sometimes they can even get, you know, a West Coast team to come in and take a look at TD Ameritrade and play like a 3 or 4 game set.
What did this past weekend in Lincoln do to Nebraska's tournament resume?
I think that if you would have told me in February that, hey, Nebraska is going to make the tournament, make a regional, I would have thought, you know what, in the first full season of Will Bolt, you have a team coming off a year where they played, you know, 15, 20 games and then saw the season thrown away. I would have thought, yeah, that's a step in the right direction. And I think that to maybe an extent they really they got hot at a time when you know there was talk of hosting a regional. I know this may sound crazy, but Nebraska's going to still have to play their way into a regional. I know that a week ago everyone thought that this team was going to be hosting. They're going to have to be playing their way into a regional. They're going to play really good baseball down the stretch here. They've won 20 games, they've lost 10, they've got 14 to go, but they have a lot of these 4-game series coming up, and they're playing the best teams each and every weekend, aside from playing a few against Northwestern. But they're going to have to play really well to make the tournament. I'm not saying they can't still be a 2 seed. I don't see this team as a regional host. I think that if they can make the tournament, be a 2 seed, I still think that's a step in the right direction.
Definitely.
But I think they're going to. We saw this last weekend, the bullpen got exposed, and I think that we're going to see that again in the next couple of weeks when you're playing these 4-game sets because they just don't have the arms. And I think part of that is when you lose a guy like a Kyle Perry and a Colby Gomez before the season starts, those were experienced arms that knew how to get college guys out. And it just puts stress on different guys. You're asking guys to do different roles, and it just hasn't worked out the last couple of weeks. And so – I still think this team will make a regional, but they're going to have to play well down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And because I'm not sure that I want to be a Big Ten team that tries to back their way into this tournament, because this could be a 3-bid league, could be a 4-bid league, but it's not going to be a 5-bid.
Yeah, I agree with you. Nebraska has some work to do. They do get Rutgers and Indiana this weekend, still have Ohio State and Michigan. So Nebraska has a chance to make up for this past weekend, this upcoming weekend, because Indiana's the only team ranked. Curious, though, I think Nebraska will get everything they want to know about how the committee thinks about the Big Ten is when the 20 are announced as regional host sites. It probably now will not include Nebraska, but will it include a Big Ten team? I think you'll get an understanding of what your roadmap has to look like. They can make up for what happened this past weekend, but I don't think they can get back to hosting in Lincoln. Matt, as always, I appreciate it. I know you're busy. I know we'll see you out and about. You got the Storm Chasers tonight. You got track and field going on. It's a fun time of the year. At least we have all this stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice turning of the page from spring football. We get to kind of see everything else that's been happening.
Yeah, and in 114 days, we'll have a major college football game.
Let's do it.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Talk to you guys later.
Matt Lothar from KATV. Robin Washington's coming up next.